Hour number two tonight. Joel Skousen is standing by, editor of World Affairs Brief, and is he going to have a full issue this week? Hello, Joel. Welcome back.
Well, it's good to be with you. It's exciting times we live in. Discouraging times, but exciting.
Indeed. As I always say, when you leave, goodness knows what's going to happen between now and next month. And we had another one. And next month it could be war on North Korea. Who knows? I don't, but I'm watching like everybody else is.
Yeah, all right. I think that's coming. Trump is making every sign that... Diplomacy is over.
Yeah. He couldn't be any more clear about what his intentions are, even though he says, we don't signal in advance what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Well, the calm before the storm. Wait and see.
And North Korea has all but declared war in the United States.
That's right. That's right. So what do you want to jump into first? Kim and his $14 billion GDP autocratic dictatorship or what? Want to go to Las Vegas first? What do you want to do?
I would like to cover the Las Vegas new issues on that. But let's talk about North Korea because it's going to be a very, very big story when this breaks. Even though people won't be surprised if there's an airstrike in North Korea, if it's not done correctly, North Korea is going to respond by a full-scale war with South Korea. And they're setting the stage now to blame Trump for it. Senator Corker talking about him starting World War III and NPR. And
oh, yeah.
Everybody's talking about, you know, Trump being unstable and the most dangerous man on the planet. But if somebody doesn't sabotage this, I mean, Kim Jong-un really needs to be taken out. He's going to have the missiles and the reentry warhead capability within a year and the nuclear weapons to deliver it. And so Trump's got a year to eliminate that threat. And the establishment seems dead set to try to thwart that.
I don't know what else Trump and Mattis and Dunford and you don't hear about McMaster much anymore could do to make this clear about their intent. I really don't. Well, we've given the president five or six options that he can choose from. Like Trump is going to make the decision. I don't buy that. I do believe there are probably five or six options. But by far the biggest story, Joel, that in my view has come out of this whole scenario of war with North Korea is what we learned a day or two ago, that last year, North Korean cyber warriors, their hackers, got into the South Korean U.S. top secret command computers and stole the entire American battle plans for invading and trying to decapitate North Korea. That was one of the biggest espionage coups of my lifetime. We don't know about a lot of the coups, but that one we just found out about. Their hackers got in and stole the entire battle plan that the Americans and South Koreans had put together to try to deal with North Korea. That is a stunner. Did you see that one?
I did see that one. I really frankly suspect that China's behind that as well. You know, China's been covering for North Korea as well as supplying
right,
it with
right.
All kinds of things. I mean, a lot of the products apparently we buy made in China are made in North Korea and shipped through China and labeled as made in China. So, you know, China has some very, very sophisticated hackers and things, and I'm just not sure how advanced North Korea is in that area unless they get, you know, the technology and things from China.
But well, they hung it on North Korea.
They're one team.
Whatever.
They're one team, and it is a very devastating intelligence coup. It's actually not that unpredictable. You can pretty well figure out what their game plan would be. And
you've mentioned it here and outlined it very well.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure.
Any military advisor knows exactly what the game plan has got to be. The only thing that it might tip their hand or reveal that would be damaging is if it's a dumb plan. And if it's not a good plan decapitating Kim is not something that's very easy to do, given that you're a member of the Hermit Kingdom. And, certainly, you know, decapping is three major points of offensive power. Is something that even North Korea knows about. I mean, they fully predict that. There's nothing much they can do about it with U.S. air power except to try to retaliate before all of that could be taken out. And so I'm not sure that it's as damaging as what people think.
Oh, they,
but it's
they,
certainly embarrassing. It's certainly embarrassing.
And it was kept quiet for about a year. Yes, it was embarrassing. So it didn't come out. Now it's out. And they had it reconfigured, their whole plan, within 24 hours, I'm sure, or less. Because, as
you
say, they're...
You can't reconfigure everything. If it's the correct plan, you can't reconfigure that much.
All right, well, let me take that as an opening, then. At this point, let's, for our listeners who may not have heard you last month, or don't read World Affairs Brief, what would the perfect plan be, in your view?
Well, the perfect plan has to be in one day to take out all of their missile launch sites, all of their major air bases with their aircraft, and as much of their artillery that you can get, which would require some really major area-type weapons or neutron, you know, bomb weapons to really do that effectively. And the artillery in the short term is the quickest response North Korea's got. I mean, you can open up with 15,000 artillery tubes and start to devastate Seoul within 15 minutes of a U.S. strike. And but you can with devastating cruise missile power and air power all at one strike really diminish that and keep that from being an effective target. I mean, there's going to be some damage. There's no way you can stop it completely. But if you can stop the major missiles from landing in South Korea, and you can gain air superiority within a day, then you can set up cap patrols over the artillery tubes that they have hidden in mountain tunnels, which can come out and fire and then go back into the tunnel for protection. You can have cap aircraft just blast them as soon as they come out of the tunnels. But as I say, I have a feeling that what Mattis and his generals are giving Donald Trump are some token... let's show them who's boss and throw some B-1 airstrikes on things that won't hit, the artillery in such a devastating
really?
Way.
Really? That's interesting. They're going to try and get them to back down with a limited venue.
Yeah, that's what I fear. And, of course, as I've also said, I predict that even if they did it right, you don't want to invade North Korea. That's a really tough thing.
Well, we did that once before. It didn't work.
Yeah, I know. Well, actually, it did work after a great deal of bloodletting, but because we allowed the Chinese to be able to continue to send troops and material unmolested, just like in Vietnam, we didn't interdict Chinese and Russian supplies to Vietnam. It's hard to win a war like that. You can blast them and stop their production, just like we did to Germany in World War II. But if you have a safe haven prescribed for Russia and China to continue to come in, and you say, well, we don't want World War III, so we can't touch Chinese troops, then you're going to have a stalemate again, and they'll sue for peace, so to speak, and you'll postpone that trigger event for later on when Russia and China are ready to use North Korea as the entrance into World War III. I don't think they're ready now, and that's why they've been trying desperately to stop Trump from doing this, from doing a strike or a decapitating strike, but I think he's got to do it. This is the last opportunity before it's too late.
Too late, 6 months?
I would say 9 months to a year. I mean, North Korea still hasn't got a warhead that has successfully re-entered the atmosphere without burning up. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter if they have a nuclear weapon or if they've miniaturized it, which is very problematic. It's one thing to do a test hydrogen bomb and another thing to miniaturize it, unless China's just handing them the technology, which so far they've been reluctant to do because they don't want this trigger event going off yet. To be safe, I would say, Trump has a year to clean up this problem, and I think he would like to. He has set the time for talking for Tillerson is over, and the Ronald Reagan is heading for Korean waters, or if it's there, not there already. The Stennis turned around from its East Pac deployment, is back in Bremerton, so there's one aircraft carrier group out there. But that's enough with a bunch of cruise missiles, including what's in Guam, and the B-1 bombers and the F-16s in Korea to do some devastating one-day airstrikes if they do it right.
And don't forget the F-35s are there so they can break down.
Well, you've got to remember the F-35s have this massive ability, the only aircraft that has this ability to coordinate. It's got all the built-in AWACS coordination right into the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it can coordinate with 20 other F-35s in coordinating targets and attacks, and no other aircraft in the world can do that yet. So even though it has a lot of technological problems, the thing that the superiority of the F-35 over any other fighter aircraft because of that integrated electronics package there is really something that the military services want, and that's why it continues to survive despite all the problems that it's plagued with.
All right, what do you do with Kim's Navy? And by that I'm talking about his 72 submarines.
Well, these submarines can be hunted down. You know, they're a problem. It's to be sure they're going to bloody the nose of the United States Navy to a certain extent, but they can be hunted down, and we've got the most sophisticated anti-submarine warfare in the world in the United States. And but it would take some time. It can't be taken out immediately like the three prongs of offensive power that we're talking about
right.
in the air.
And as we discussed last time, the idea of a ground invasion of the North probably isn't really being considered at this point. You got a million-man army, and they're pretty fanatical about their beliefs and who they don't like.
Have total air superiority over the battlefield, it's pretty difficult even to be a million-man army out there. You have
they have
movement
to
and you get obliterated.
Fragment all over the place,
yeah. Right.
Well, we will see. We'll probably see, as you say, within 6 to 9 months. I wouldn't frankly be surprised if it happened before the holidays.
No, I'm not saying that it would take 6 or 9 months for Trump to act. I think it's going to act sooner or later. I'm just saying that he's got 6 or 9 months to solve the problem militarily.
Before they get to deployable nukes.
Kim has some real dangerous weapons to threaten Hawaii and Guam.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he doesn't have maneuvering warheads as far as we've been able to determine. So they can be shot down. They would, with our 50% to 70% success rate with our kinetic warheads on our ABM systems, would probably take two missiles, at least two, maybe three missiles shot at every incoming warhead to guarantee success. But we've got the missiles to do that. It would deplete them significantly, just like 500 Tomahawks in a one-day strike would deplete the U.S. inventory by half. And Russia and China may be just gleefully saying, yeah, that's not very smart, but let them do it.
Well, my feeling is if we do make the first move, and barring a Tonkin false flag kind of a thing, we would be clearly making the first move. We, as an adversarial military to North Korea. And that, of course, steps across two pronouncements that I know about by China, that if the Americans make the first move, we will move in immediately and support North Korea.
Yeah, but I think they're bluffing.
I know you said that. I understand it.
Yep.
But I do think that the chance cannot be completely discounted that China would immediately go after Taiwan.
Well, that's right. I mean, but I'm not believing that they're ready to take it into a nuclear war scenario yet.
Not sure that they'd have to, even though that's the talk. Taiwan can hold out, and you've read these things, 5 to 6 days, I think, against a sustained missile attack, non-nuclear, conventional arms, so to speak, by the Chinese. They have, 5,000 rockets aimed at Taiwan,
just
across the water.
It's their version of the artillery, poised against Taiwan.
Maybe more than that by now.
Yeah. I'm not sure they're ready to do that yet, as their first response, rather than just you know, reinforcing North Korea. I would say, because since they don't want this to escalate to World War III in a nuclear fashion yet, I think we'll see a response that will be firm and will guarantee that the U.S. gets a bloody nose. And if they tangle with North Korea, and even though it gets the upper hand, it gets the excuse to the globalist advisors around Trump to say, okay, let's call for a ceasefire, and then we're back to what we had before.
Right, which you have spelled out in the past, and I think that's a distinct possibility. What form or what format would Chinese aid to North Korea take?
Well, it would certainly involve a military support, replacement rockets, perhaps replacement aircraft, continual shipping of new artillery pieces in.
Wouldn't they be interdicted, though, if we have air superiority?
No, the U.S. policy is not to interdict anything coming from Red China.
Even during a war?
Well, they didn't do it during the Korea War. You know, the globalists were running things out of the U.N. during the Korean War, and the Chinese were untouchable.
Wow.
They were untouchable in
Interesting.
Vietnam.
That would be interesting.
It's so easy to go to the press and say, oh, you can't do this. If you attack China or Russia, you're going to get World War III on your hands and be blamed for it.
Mm-hmm.
No president seems to, you know, realize that you can get away with that, calling their bluff earlier, but now it's getting more and more problematic as Russia and China have huge missile and nuclear forces now.
Ground troops from China, if needed?
Yeah, but I think at first what you'll see is a major buildup of Chinese troops just across the border of North Korea in waiting as a threat, you know, as a veiled threat. All right, you know, you want the Korean War over again? Just try a ground invasion and we'll send the Chinese troops across the border. But I don't think they would do that unless the U.S. really got serious about invading the North and using air superiority to devastate the North Korean army. You may see that. If the China wants to, you know, the Orientals don't like to lose face. And that's one of the problems in dealing with them. You know, in negotiations, they're always two-faced. They'll always lie to you and deceive and put you off. But in terms of outright defeat, negotiation, or surrender, the Chinese won't do it. They cannot lose face.
Very interesting. Well, there are also always, in times of war, things that don't go right. The best play, best played angles, the best strategies just don't work sometimes. And there could be some real surprises. Kim might have some surprises. Do you think he does? Things that would catch the U.S. completely off guard.
Yes, it's very possible. It's a very close society. We don't have a lot of spies in there, people on the ground. They just watch everywhere they arrest everyone, mostly false things about spying. But, he could have some surprises. But nothing that the U.S. with forthright military policy couldn't handle and couldn't make him pay dearly for. But when you got a bunch of globalists trying to get Trump to do limited responses, as in Vietnam, until it becomes a bloody mess, then it's a problem.
Right.
And Trump just doesn't have the expertise to know how to counter or to view what his generals are saying or what's right or wrong. He just doesn't.
Do you think that? Okay, this is important now. Do you think that's why Trump originally said, I've given control to my military generals to do what they think is best in whatever situation it was, I forget. Is he that kind of a president? You decide, Mattis, you decide, McMaster, you decide, Dunford, you take it over, you do it. I don't want to do it. I mean, I'm not saying those are the words he'd use, but would he defer to them to the extent that he takes himself out of the strategizing and out of the decision-making and out of the implementing of the plans?
No, I don't think he takes himself out of the final decision-making. He's very egotistical about being
president. Oh, yes, he is.
He wants to make the final decision and all, but he has defaulted completely. When he got in front of these briefers, and he just got overwhelmed. The reason that other people of the administration who were at that briefing in the Pentagon tank was because, you know, one of the people said, you know, Trump was just peppering them with questions and interrupting them, but they were not intelligent questions. They did not show a real savvy military background. They were stupid questions.
Amateur stupid questions. Yeah,
that's right. Trump, you know, and they gave him, they answered all his questions with superficial excuses, as the globalist advisors are very expert at doing. And I think Trump just basically says, and he has a natural respect for the military anyway. You know, they've wowed him every time that they've been in his presence. And so I think he's capitulated there. I mean, he wants to let them make the decision. He's going to make the final decision, but he's going to do what they say.
He'll still be able to take the credit, if there is credit to be taken from this thing. Let's say the operation is a success. Kim is killed or otherwise made to be less than what he is now, to the extent that we can sustain an armistice, another armistice or a truce.
Yeah, but the communist system is ingrained in the people. Everybody's been propagandized since their youth.
That's right.
You know, some people stay with it, but you've got an overwhelming majority of diehard communists in North Korea who have been propagandized for so long.
Since the age of three.
I mean, it will be not at all difficult to find dozens of replacements for Kim Jong-un. I mean, I think, you know, he's picked these people, or China's picked these people specifically because this is great to have a crazy man start World War III someday. That's the whole purpose of having someone like him there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they can still find other people who are unstable. I noticed that Kim's sister now has been given a high-profile position.
Oh, yeah. Elevated her status quite a bit. I'm really not convinced that that he is crazy or imbalanced.
No, he's not. He's a spoiled brat.
I think that's a much more appropriate way to analyze it. Yes. Stand by, Joel. We'll take a break, come right back, and then we'll dive into the Las Vegas morass. And I have put together my theory. I'm sure you've got your theory. And were you able to look at that video?
Yes, I was. I did look. I did see it.
I was very impressed with that.
Yeah.
All right. We will be right back. Welcome back, talking with Joel Skousen. If you'd like a free complimentary copy, that's redundant. If you'd like a complimentary copy of World Affairs Brief, or if you'd like a free copy of World Affairs Brief, all you have to do is ask for it. Just write to Joel at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. Tell him you heard him here and you'd like very much to have a sample copy. At no charge and you will get it. And hopefully you'll be able to subscribe thereafter and remain as informed as anybody could want. All right, Las Vegas. Now, I've been watching this since about 3 hours after it happened, every day, up to 18 hours a day. And I put all what I think are the important pieces up there on the homepage for people to look at and to be able to have access to. There have been more developments today. But I want to talk just a little bit about this video. This young man and his girlfriend went through one of the most horrific events that two people or one person could go through and survived. And what this horrific event is, in my view, is a massively applied terrorist attack against a certain specific group of Americans. A genocide, if you will, and the description that young man gave, I thought, given what he had been through, the chaos, the stress, the woman was just an emotional wreck. Talk about PTSD. I thought it was an extraordinary experience to sit there and listen to that. I thought he did a remarkable job in keeping a good cadence of the events that they went through And so many things happened that I put it up, and I highly recommend it.
Now, this is a young guy and his girlfriend in his probably early 20s. You know, this is not a sophisticated, well-spoken person. He's not dumb by any means. He's quite smart by the way that he shoots off rapid-fire memory, etc. But he comes off completely sincere. I mean, I can tell somebody who's, you know, crafting a story and yep. hemming and hawing and making it around. This guy is just no pauses, just goes 1, 2, 3 right through the thing and shows emotion in it. He's absolutely credible in terms of his sincerity.
I totally concur. I make my living listening to people, voices, and I heard exactly what you just described. He could not possibly have been more sincere.
The important story for your listeners, you know, is that he talks about after they got out of the shooting arena where the people were being shot, et cetera, they go to the Tropicana across the street, and they're herded in to people trying to get them into the casino. And he meets this one big burly guy with looks like he's an official of something. He's got this big metallic suitcase. And
yeah, yes, he, olive skin, too. He pointed to his skin color, a Middle Eastern hue.
And he says, you know, why can't I go out the door, you know, and get out of here? I don't want to go into a room. I don't want to be with people. And he says, no, you can't go out there. Go into the casino. Trying to herd everybody into the casino. And while they're arguing with this thing, gunfire erupts in the casino of the Tropicana, and this guy rushes into the melee, meaning this is a guy who's probably got some kind of machine pistol there in his,
right.
his suitcase that he brings out to either...
And he was late for his shooting.
Yeah. There are, and I, in last week's World Affairs Brief, I did cover as much as I knew about the shooting the day after, and or a couple of days after, and one of the important things is the video that I pointed people to that do show one of the security guards opening fire on the crowd. And one of the interesting things about all this multiple shooter thing here is this could be very easily proven and solved if, in fact, in the autopsy of these people or the coroners, that the bullets were actually compared. You'd find 9mm bullets, you're going to find rifle bullets, you're going to find various different kinds of machine pistol bullets, and they're not going to match the two, AR-style 15 rifles that were among the 23 that were supposedly with the bump stock modifications of Stephen Paddock. And, of course, you know, there's no, with all the rounds that were expended, estimated at 800 to 900 rounds at least, you'd be ankle deep in brass, in empty cartridge brass, you know, in his hotel room. And you see a few scattered around from the police picture that was leaked on that.
Did you see my photo analysis?
No way that all that automatic fire took place from that hotel room.
Correct. Did you see the photo analysis I did with all those pictures?
Which photo analysis are you talking about?
All the photos that were leaked from the crime scene in the hotel room, the suite.
Yes, I have seen those.
Okay. I've put marks on them and arrows and so forth. No question. Where's the brass?
Yeah.
Where are the casings?
Now, you know, one of the things that they did, whoever did this setup, to set Paddock up, you know, did their homework. When I first heard this automatic fire, and I'm a former military officer and I know automatic fire, and this had the rate, you know, you can tell by the rate, you know, an AR-15 can go up as high as 950 rounds a minute. This was about 600 rounds per minute, these weapons that were firing, which is a slower rate of fire typical of a belt-fed squad automatic weapon that the Marine Corps and the Army uses. But the point is the bump stock, there were certain signatures in the videos or in the audio of, and video that indicated a bump stock was being used. And one of those is the rate of fire changes. It slows down at the end, and you can hear that in a couple of instances because you operate a bump stock by pushing forward on the handguard or the forward pistol guard, which often they add to them. And then if you're trying to stop and you release that pressure, the actual cyclic rate slows down, and that doesn't happen with a belt-fed automatic weapon. Now, you only hear that once or twice, a variation of rapid. The other times, they're absolutely solid. And so it indicated to me that there were belt-fed automatics being shot, as well as a bump stock, as well as you know, a machine pistol, which we saw in the video, the security guard bringing one up, and you see the light flashes from the weapon going off, illuminating the people in front of him.
Would you, Joel, would you please send me that video? I've got a degraded version of it. You might have a better version. I really need to see that again.
Well, no, it's, I think there's only one version, and it happens very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. I happen to have a version where it's slowed down, where you see it in slow motion, and where it becomes very clear. You can see both hands hit the weapon as he brings it up from his side.
I'd really like to see that, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's in the World of Earth brief, which you get.
Very good.
But in any case, if people, you know, email me, they'll still get a copy of the World Affairs brief from Friday that has this video. But the slow motion where you see the security guard open up near point blank range also matches. A lady was on Michael Savage, who was a survivor, and said, I was standing there and my friend got shot from a different direction. You know, she was got shot in the stomach and her back was turned to the Mandalay Bay, proving that there were shots coming from other.
Right.
But here's the question. Here's the question, Jeff. Why the cover-up? I mean, they were shooting at the Bellagio. The whole entrance lobby was shot out, shooting at the Tropicana in the casino. Shots coming, according to this video that you just sent me, shots coming from the New Yorker or Excalibur outside the casino. It wasn't inside the building itself, but from that direction.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why the complete denial of all of these others? If you're going to make the case for terrorism and going to spook people about the phony war on terror more and more, why cover up all of the other shootings that were there and the complete denial and point to the single shooter? It reminds me
because
of the JFK assassination and the Oswald thing.
It's simply a matter of business. They can't have that out in the world. Nobody will go to Las Vegas. I'm safe nowhere in Las Vegas. The Bellagio, New York, the Trop, Mandalay, where am I safe? There were also reports of gunfire in Caesar's Palace. I've got an eyewitness who claims there were at least 20 rounds fired off in Caesar's Palace. This was a very wide-ranging, sophisticated attack with multiple shooter teams or individual shooters in the case of perhaps the Bellagio. No photographs of the Bellagio, not even prior photographs were circulated of the front entrance. The woman said that the windows were clearly shot out. The local news channel that I used to work at for nearly 3 years there as news director wouldn't even send a reporter over there. They had a reporter sitting down in the studio saying, well, there are reports about the Bellagio and blah, 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 and nothing really happened there, and these reports are erroneous, and that's all they did. So you have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, the media is owned by the city. The city is owned by international business interests. And those shootings, had they been announced as being in four or five different places, would have been even worse for business. I guarantee it. One more shooting event, Las Vegas is on its knees. It's that touchy. So they couldn't admit any of these, Joel. That's why.
Well, it is very convenient they point to the single shooter thing and blame this on the bump stocks. You know, the only loophole in the automatic weapons ban in the United States, and it's not an effective one. Anyone who shot a bump stock realizes you
stupid.
Can't hit anything at even
it's
25
stupid.
Yards.
It's a toy adaptation. You can't do anything. You're right.
It's just to get the thrill of running automatic without being able to hit anything. It just has no purpose.
It's stupid. It's totally stupid.
Now, one of the other videos that came out that is a must-see, and I'm going to cover that in this week's World Affairs Brief, is Mike Adams' forensic audio of taking that, putting it apart, and realizing. And one thing that I had not realized, even as a military person, because I don't usually take incoming rounds in the military on pavement, but you hear this clicking sound, which is different from the report of a machine gun, and that's the bullets hitting the pavement. giving kind of a high-pitched clicking
right,
sound
as
they're hitting the pavement. And I could hear this, and then click, 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 and then boom, 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 and you hear. And what he did is realize, yeah, this is the bullets hitting the pavement, and then the report, and you can check the timing between the click, 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 and the boom, boom, boom that comes out afterwards and determine the distance that they're firing from based upon the type of weapon that they claim that was using. And he's got two different types. And remember, he's limited to what you've got in the audios that are various circulating. And there's a lot of shooting going on in a distance at other places that he can't hear any pavement clicks. So the only thing that he can judge by are the two shooters that were shooting at the actual venue. And one was at 250 yards and the other was 600 yards coming from the Mandalay Bay. And we know now it wasn't at least much from the 32nd floor, as much it was from somewhere between the 4th and the 10th floor where you see all these muzzle flashes going off. But there was some shooting. Obviously, because of the shell casings there, or they could have planted them, but...
I think they were a plant. I'm not convinced that Paddock shot anything in that room. I think the shell casings were planted. I've made clear through my analysis that one of the shell casings sitting in the thicker pool of blood has blood on top of the edges of it. It didn't roll over. It was dropped in there,
yeah,
and whoever
dropped it
had picked it up and got a smudge on it. The smudge is clear. In my view, Stephen Paddock, who used to work at Lockheed Martin in their top secret...
That was a long time ago.
That's right. He still had top secret clearance, and that could have certainly nurtured some early black ops military affiliations with him. That goes back, as you say, a long time. But I do think there's a very good chance that Stephen Paddock was an arms dealer, an arms merchant, working for one or more elements within this government, or perhaps another government. He had the aircraft for it. He took over 20 cruises to locations where weapons deals could easily be imagined to be made. I think that the weapons were brought up to that room on the service elevator, not by him, but by people who were charged with bringing them up there. I think that they were laid out, and I think he had a business meeting with clients scheduled for around 10 o'clock, and they were going to go through the weapons and make purchases. I think
show why I disagree with that analysis.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe there has to be some connection with Stephen Paddock with the deep state. He was in accounting services with Lockheed Martin, not anything special, but... that doesn't preclude sometime along his career getting involved in the deep state. But the point is, because first of all, you don't make $5 million profit a year gambling like he does.
No, of course not.
That just doesn't happen. So he's getting his income somewhere else, and it's being
laundered
through the casinos.
Yeah.
But the problem with the gun dealer thing is that, first of all, these weapons that were seen here were traced to various gun shops in three different states, and they've interviewed the people, and they remember the guy.
Correct.
Now, gun dealers don't buy retail and market and shop these guns around.
No, only for demonstration purposes, though. Props. We can get you this,
There's no evidence of... gun dealers are... this is a very big market worldwide, and... you don't just have small town dealers who go around. Gun dealers never buy retail weapons where they go through the background checks. Never. Unheard of.
Did you
and
hear?
So, point is, I'm thinking there's some other explanation for why he's buying these weapons and getting set up. His handler is getting him to go and buy these weapons so that they can be traced. And however they got up to the room, we don't know, but there's a lot of weapons and a lot of weight, to get up the room. Why won't they reveal the security cameras? Look at the security at the Mandalay Bay.
Oh, they had it all.
They knew when his car left the garage. That was one of the things they came out with. Somebody else was in the room with him because there was another phone charger that didn't match any of his phones. And when someone was using his key card into the room while his car was out of the garage. Well, now how do you track a civilian car? That must mean that anything they put in the windshield has an RFID chip in it. to tell the Mandalay Bay when that car goes out or
did
in.
Did you hear, this is important. I want to make sure I get this in. Did you hear his brother Eric slip up when he was giving his second interview and say that my brother was an R, he almost said arms dealer. He got AR out and then he stopped and he said, oh, I'm sorry, please don't. You want to hear that? This is amazing.
I have not heard that before, but...
All right, this is very suggestive that his brother knew that Stephen Paddock was in the arms business, and that's where all the money came from. At what level? I can't tell you. Now, here is Eric Paddock, clearly rattled. He's been going on for 15 minutes at this point in the interview. I've got it posted. Just completely disheveled in his speech. He's chattering. He's just... He's been talked to, okay? He's shook. Now, he slips up and I think let the cat out of the bag. You'll hear it and he'll stop and he'll say, I'm sorry, and he is scared big time. Here we go.
I mean, it's something he just does every week.
You use the phrase evil genius. Do you think that was?
I'm sorry. I mean, that's the thing I shouldn't have said, but that's what people are, I mean, that he's this... You know, but he's a highly intelligent. What I mean, there's absolutely no. And this is the other part that I want to stress with this.
Here we go.
It doesn't matter that they won't chase people, but people are saying, "Oh, he must have had help." Steve had no help. Steve didn't take help. It did not take a village for Steve. Steve was an arm. I'm sorry. Please don't. I'm using a colloquial. I was about to use a colloquial term that would besmudge one of the armed forces. Steve was a...
He was asking the media, please don't use that. And he stopped himself. I've done enough interviews to know exactly what happened there. He said Steve was an arms merchant and he stopped himself at AR and then said, I'm sorry. Who was he saying I'm sorry
but he
to?
But he explained and said that he was...
He's quick on his
avoided
feet.
...avoided using a military term.
Yeah, he's very quick. I agree. I don't know if that's sincere. I don't know what to tell you, but that was a very interesting slip.
Yeah, that was.
It's like
that
you
here
going
we go.
To Publix.
One more time.
I mean, it's something he just does every week.
You use the phrase evil genius. Do you think that was?
I'm sorry. I mean, that's the thing I shouldn't have said, but that's what people are... I mean, that he's this... You know, but he's a highly intelligent. What I mean, there's absolutely no. And this is the other part that I want to stress with this. That it. I mean, it doesn't matter that they won't chase people. But people are saying, "Oh, he must have had help." Steve had no help. Steve didn't take help. It did not take a village for Steve. Steve was an arm. I'm sorry. Please don't. I'm using a colloquial. I was about to use a colloquial term that would besmudge one of the armed forces. Steve was a standalone guy.
Okay, there you go. Make of it what you will.
Well, in any case, this was a setup, and he was the patsy. He was the Oswald, as in the JFK assassination.
Yeah.
And
he was executed in there. Yeah.
So many anomalies. I mean, for example, I posted a video that showed all of the blocked out windows from the area which we saw the videos of the weapons, muzzle flashes of the automatic weapons going off somewhere around the lower half of the building. And sure enough, the next day, you can see blackened out panels of glass, not the shiny gold tinted glass like is typical of the Mandalay, and some of the, even of the higher level. One of
right.
the glass workers who installed that said, yeah, you, if you know how to do it, you can easily take those windows in and out. Well, clearly, panels had been replaced the day
yep.
after,
yep.
And I think those were shooting positions of where most of the automatic fire actually came from.
I concur 100%. Yes. No doubt. They were black. They weren't reflective, and they had been put in there. The glass worker said, as you remember, you can take one out in 60 seconds if you know what you're doing to clean them. That's how they clean them. Take them out, clean them, put them in. So I agree. We'll watch this. It's getting to be crazier all the time. What did you make of the FBI slapping Sheriff Lombardo down when he said Paddock must have had help along the way somewhere.
Well, of course, he came out after talking about the somebody else must have been in the room, you know, and said, but there's only one shooter. We are convinced there's only one shooter.
There you're saying.
Why break out two windows?
That's right.
Why have a room? Remember, he got this suite complimentary, but they don't give an adjoining room next door complimentary to anybody.
No, no need.
Well, you get a suite complimentary.
Not when you're a solo person.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. Joel, thank you.
Go ahead.
No, thank you. You finish your last comment there.
Just saying there's no reason, by the way, to have 23 weapons up there unless it's a setup. I mean, if you're going to do a shooting, you take up an automatic weapon, maybe two because the barrels get hot, but 23, that's a setup.
Absolutely. 120 Muslims work in the Mandalay, approximately. 10,000 live in Las Vegas, approximately. And don't you think there might be a few radicalized Muslims in there?
No, I don't think that this is a radicalized Muslim. Remember, ISIS is a U.S. intelligence.
Correct,
intelligence
but they're still Muslim. Yes, understood. They have endless numbers of shooters they can bring in here. Endless.
Right. And, but only under U.S. direction.
Absolutely. All right, thank you, Joel. And the reason I didn't get to see that video in last week's World Affairs Brief is because I was working on this.
Right.
I will go look for it.
Understand, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Goodbye, then.
All right. Joel Skousen. Okay. We will pause and come right back.